The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
About a year into the pandemic, how's the health of our economy? What about interest rates? The chair of the Federal Reserve faces lawmakers today.
He's likely to strike a somewhat optimistic tone, but tempered with a lot of caution.
Plus, why WeWork could get a second chance at going public. And it's not just big company stocks helping investors make money. We'll tell you why some traders are cashing in on smaller companies. It's Tuesday, February 23rd. I'm Mark Stewart with the Wall Street Journal, and this is What's News. As we first reported exclusively, WeWork owner SoftBank is in advanced talks to settle with the company's former CEO and co-founder Adam Neumann. SoftBank took a majority stake in the shared office space company after WeWork's attempted IPO collapsed in 2019. A deal could clear the way for WeWork's second attempt at a public listing. The Journal's Maureen Farrell has more.
Adam Neumann, some early employees and shareholders, had been fighting with SoftBank about roughly $3 billion that SoftBank was going to spend to buy their shares. As of Monday, it looks like SoftBank, Adam Neumann, WeWork's special committee is all very close to a deal. They're all close to settling their respective lawsuits with each other. So if that litigation's out of the way, it could clear a path for WeWork to move forward potentially with a SPAC deal we've heard that they've been negotiating.
People familiar with the matter said there is no guarantee that an agreement will be produced, but if there is one, it could be finalized in the coming days. Neumann had stepped down as investors balked at buying the money-losing company's shares, as well as conflicts of interest and erratic behavior. In Australia, Facebook has restored news pages after reaching a deal with the Australian government. As we told you last week, the social media giant removed access to news content over a proposed law that could require tech companies to pay publishers for journalism on their platforms. The government said it would amend legislation to clarify how tech companies would be regulated. Facebook said it's satisfied its main concerns were addressed. And officials said they were told by CEO Mark Zuckerberg it intends to strike commercial deals to pay for content. The legislation is being widely watched globally and could offer a model for how other countries could compel tech giants to pay for content. The wife of imprisoned Mexican drug lord Joaquin El Chapo Guzman was arrested on Monday at Washington's Dulles Airport, according to the Justice Department. American-born Emma Coronel is accused of helping her husband run his drug empire and carry out an escape from a maximum security prison in Mexico. She couldn't be reached for comment. And as we talked about last night on the podcast, more than 500,000 people in the U.S. have died from COVID-19, according to data from Johns Hopkins University. Last night, President Biden held a ceremony to honor the lives lost.
We have to resist becoming numb to the sorrow. We have to resist viewing each life as a statistic or a blur or on the news. We must do so to honor the dead, but equally important, care for the living, those who left behind.
As part of the remembrance, 500 candles lined the steps of the White House's South Portico. Today and tomorrow, Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell will be delivering the central bank's closely watched report on the economy and monetary policy to members of Congress. He's likely to get questions from lawmakers about interest rates, inflation, the employment picture, and more. There's a lot to discuss, so let's bring in the Wall Street Journal's Paul Kiernan. He covers the Fed for us. Paul, good morning.
Hey, Mark. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Paul, the Fed chair is going to be asked about where things stand on the overall economic picture. As you know, U.S. GDP fell last year despite a strong fourth quarter. unemployment is still exceptionally high. So what kind of picture do we expect Powell to paint for lawmakers?
So when the Fed chair is giving his presentation to Congress, he's likely to paint the picture of an economic recovery that has gained steam in recent weeks, but one that remains buffeted by risks and one in which jobs still haven't come back to where they were before the pandemic. So he's likely to strike a somewhat optimistic tone, but tempered with a lot of caution. And he's likely to maintain his position that fiscal policy support remains essential to getting the economy fully back on its feet.
This brings us to the stimulus package. We know Chairman Powell supports more federal intervention right now, broadly speaking. But do we expect to hear about specifics like paycheck protection or checks to families and individuals or infrastructure?
Yeah, so he's probably not going to delve into specifics, given the Fed really tries to stay out of political debates. And this is a heated political debate right now. So you're not going to hear him say, we should really have, you know, $2,000 stimulus checks instead of $1,400 stimulus checks. He won't say that. What he will say is that fiscal support for the economy remains essential, and he'll probably try to reassure lawmakers that if the Biden stimulus does create any measure of overheating or inflation, the Fed is there to prevent that from getting out of hand.
On that point, as it stands, this is a $1.9 trillion stimulus package, and it's fueling conversation about inflation for the first time in a while. What kind of role could the Fed play in controlling that?
So the Fed has two jobs. One is to promote maximum employment, and the other is stable prices, which they define as 2% inflation. Now, there are, as you mentioned, the advancing stimulus package has kind of rekindled concerns about inflation that might be above the Fed's target. But Fed officials have tried to make clear to the public in recent months that there's a very kind of specific kind of inflation that they're looking for. There's also a possibility that, you know, the stimulus package creates or enhances, you know, a pickup in demand, and, you know, people rush back to restaurants and movie theaters because they haven't been in, you know, a year, and are just spending money, and inflation picks up and goes above the Fed's, you know, 2% target. What Chairman Powell has said, and others, is that they would view that scenario as also likely to be temporary, and so they probably wouldn't raise interest rates because of that. You know, if it proves to be persistent, or, you know, maybe if inflation rises, you know, way above 2%, then they will likely think about addressing the problem, raising interest rates.
And let's stay on the topic of interest rates. This is not just about lending. Interest rates can help set the roadmap for future economic growth. So are low interest rates here to stay, or will we hear hints of an adjustment?
So Chairman Powell is very unlikely to say anything that indicates the Fed is thinking about raising interest rates. They've got a really high bar for that. They basically want to see the labor market return to, you know, a situation that they consider healthy, which is not the case right now. Powell said that the real unemployment rate, when you take into account factors like mismeasurement and stuff, is closer to 10% than the 6.3% that the Labor Department reports. So we're a long way from having the kind of job market that the Fed would like to see. And the other condition that they have placed on raising interest rates is inflation back at the Fed's 2% target. So if just one of those scenarios is fulfilled, you know, probably unless inflation, you know, goes really, really high, they're really unlikely to raise interest rates.
Paul Kiernan, we'll look for your reporting on WSJ.com. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks a lot, Mark. Have a good one.
Just ahead, the stocks that are seen as sensitive to economic recovery. We'll talk to our markets editor in Hong Kong after the break.
Hi, I'm Ben Rizzuto, wealth strategist at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of futures. At Janus Henderson, we are committed to helping you invest in a brighter future for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
Banking giant HSBC is sharpening its focus on Asia, pouring in about $6 billion of investment in the next 5 years. It's part of a move to double down on its core business in the region. On the earnings front, we'll get some further insight into the retail sector with Home Depot and Macy's reporting results today. As we look at the market, shares of small companies are outpacing their larger counterparts by their widest margin in more than two decades. For a closer look at what's behind the growth, I'm joined by markets editor Quinton Webb in Hong Kong. Hi, Quinton.
Hi there, Mark.
Quinton, as you know, the Russell 2000, which is an index tracking smaller company stocks, has seen some records. Specifically, what kind of companies are we talking about, and what is it that's fueling this rise?
Right. So we're talking about smaller companies than those in the S&P 500, say, and that means, in general, these are companies that are more domestic in focus. They tend to be in more cyclical industries that are more sensitive to economic recovery. So things like energy and materials. And, you know, one reason that there is this rise underway is that people think some of these stocks have more room to run than large cap stocks like the tech giants, for example, which have already achieved these stratospheric valuations of hundreds of billions or in some cases into the trillions of dollars.
And Quinton, let's talk about pricing. Smaller company shares aren't necessarily cheaper.
Yeah, that's an important point to note because there has been this run-up in the Russell and also because earnings have been pretty depressed because of the pandemic. So if you look at standard measures such as price-to-earnings multiples, you wouldn't necessarily say that small-cap stocks are cheaper. But, you know, the kind of counter-argument to that is maybe they have more kind of room to rise quickly than those of large cap companies. But certainly for skeptics, this is one kind of important note of caution at the moment. These stocks already look in some cases rather expensive.
Quinton Webb, thank you as always.
Thanks very much.
And finally, ski season just isn't the same during the pandemic. This year, you may need a reservation before you get on the slopes. Many lodges are closed or limited in use, and the restaurants that are open have reduced capacity. Skiers are being asked by resorts to ski with packs full of snacks and drinks. And when it comes to après-ski fun, it's still there, but now parking lots, patio heaters, and fire pits have become gathering spots. That's what's news for Tuesday. We're back tonight with a new show. We'll be tracking earnings as well as today's testimony by the Federal Reserve Chair on WSJ.com. I'm Mark Stewart with the Wall Street Journal. Enjoy your day, and thanks for listening.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.